Accession number 30388, reel 5.
Yeah. Outstanding was Mary, the daughter of the engine driver of the Aberdonian Express. Her name was actually Mary Wilson. I met her in a dance hall. She was a blue-eyed blonde, and while nobody was dancing with her, I will never understand. She really was a very pretty girl. And I got dancing with her, and eventually we sort of clicked, you know, and she was a lovely kid, so my own age. And eventually she allowed me to walk her home and then meet her mum. And very often not meet her mum, because mum was out and dad was driving his train, which was much more convenient. I'll not go into the details of that, but anyway, we had a fabulous time, and I suppose it was my first real adult love affair. And it came to an end when I left. Then there was the Students' Rag Day. When the Student Rag Day was on, they took over the trams in Aberdeen and drove them around and collected money for charity, always with a tram driver in attendance, of course. And they were terrific. I mean, they were so friendly and cheerful and lovely, and didn't want to take money from us poor sailors and so on. But there was also a cinema I used to frequent, which we call the Flea Pit. It was 5 old pence sitting downstairs, 7 old pence in the circle. And I had a few experiences in that place. My parents had sent me a parcel which contained 200 cigarettes, Egyptian, Turkish cigarettes, called Commander, which had the most foul smell you can imagine. So my friend and I sat in the middle of the cinema, right in the middle of the stalls, smoking furiously. People around us were departing in droves because they couldn't stand the stink until the manager came and slung us out. But on another occasion, it was quite funny, the seating consisted of sort of seats like this chair here, with a hole where the back is, the backrest, and then a hole between that and the seat. Very primitive. And I was watching film with my friend when suddenly I felt a knee rubbing against my back. And I didn't dare turn around. I thought, well, that's too obvious. Maybe some girl is trying to give me a signal. So my right hand went round through back through this hole, and I grabbed this knee and started to explore, at which moment it was grabbed in a vice-like grip by what turned out to be a Scots guardsman in a kilt, who said, "If you didn't take your fucking hand off my knee, I'll break your fucking neck." I'll never forget it. I heard him say this, and whew, I shrunk and I behaved myself thereafter. But we had a lot of fun there. We also worked very hard. I also went, on one occasion, I went ice skating with this girlfriend of mine, and I was no skater. I used as a small boy to skate on natural ice in Germany, you know. And this is an ice rink. I'd never been on an ice rink. And all I kept doing was falling over the whole blooming time. She kept on saying, "Come on, you'll make it, you'll make it." Until suddenly we found ourselves in one of these elimination things where the music goes, and when the music's up, this side of the rink has got to leave and that side stays and carries on. And it turned out that in the end there were just 2 of us left, one other fellow and myself, and there was a prize of toiletries. So I was staggering about and falling over. It was ridiculous. We were at opposite ends we started. And I was hoping, I hope it's soon over. This guy gets his prize and most of the music stops, and then he declared me the winner. I got this box of toiletries. I said to Mary, "Never again. I'd rather go dancing than this." Well, things came to an end after about, it must have been 4 months in Aberdeen.
How did the Morse code training, how was it taught to you?
Well, as I said, there was this instructor, was a post office telegraphist. And he, first of all, we were taught to learn the signs, you know, dot, 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 and all that. Then we were shown how to use a Morse key. You know, you went da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It's only a small movement, really, so long as you... And it becomes quite natural to you. Then we had to do exercises, as you would in school. You had to... He'd tap out a message and everybody had to write it down. And then he would go through everybody's written work and say, "Oh, that's terrible, he said that, didn't say that, that, and so on, you got it wrong. Or you got it, oh, you've done very well," and so on. And it's all practice and working and practice and practice and practice. And same with sending, you made you send. And then later on you were able to communicate inter-class sort of thing. Ask somebody in Morse code, "How old are you?" or something of that nature. And they'd come back 29 years, mind your own business, or something like that. It was intensive and repetitive, but it stuck. And that was the main training, which was done in Aberdeen. And from Aberdeen, we went to Ayr, to HMS Scotia, I think Ayr was. Shrapnel was Aberdeen, yes.
Did everyone pass the course?
There was no test. A few had been weeded out earlier on that just couldn't cope. All of those who went had a reasonable standard. And we had to train across to Ayr, which meant going to Glasgow from St. Enoch's, the central station or whatever, with all our bag and baggage. And in case you don't know, naval baggage in those days consisted of a green suitcase, a small attaché case, which we called a ditty box, a hammock, which is a rolled up, which contains inside the blanket and is rolled up like an enormous banana or sausage, and the kit bag. And you had to drag all this stuff around with you. We had to go from one station to the other. It wasn't easy. Got across to Ayr, settled in, and that's where the final polishing up was taking place. And we... Blimey. Sorry. Is the time already?
Excellent.
So, in Ayr, the training was even more intensive because they speeded it up all the time. You were asked to do faster speeds. I think you were expected to read at least 32 words to the minute and send 28 to the minute or something like that, but I can't be sure that that's accurate. And I don't even remember going ashore in Ayr. There can't have been anything interesting there. And we were blooming tired because we were kept at it. Until one day, on the Tannoy, there was a request that I should report to the hut of Monsieur le Commandant something or other, a French naval officer. There was a very small French contingent who kept to themselves their naval contingent. And I went and reported to this man, and wondering what he wanted from me, and he addressed me in German, poor German. So I replied in German. In a minute he said to me, "Well, your German is a lot better than mine, obviously, thank you very much." I said, "May I ask, sir, what this is all about?" He said, "I'm afraid I can't tell you." And that was all. And I thought, blimey, somebody's remembered. I speak German. I know German. I wonder what they want from me. And, of course, when you're young and silly, all sorts of fanciful ideas go through your head. You see yourself being landed from a submarine behind the German lines, and stuff like that. All sorts of things I didn't fancy. Anyway, at Ayr, we were also taught the rudiments of visual signalling with flags and Aldous lamps. And we were also given instructions in a little bit of wireless repair work, you know, basic stuff. And then finally came the exams, and we had to sit exams, which lasted 2 days, sending and receiving and all the other bump. And there were about 140 odd of us from various groups sitting at the same time. And I sat at a table next to my friend Phil, because we stuck together all the time. And we were both pretty good, as I say so myself. And when the results came out, we were astonished to find that Phil and I had come top of the bunch and were to be AA, accelerated advancement. We were to be made up to full telegraphists from ordinary telegraphists after 9 months in the Navy, and we'd done 8 months at the time. And there were a few others, three or four others, got recommended AA, which are nearly the same. And of course, congratulations all round and all that, and then a week's leave. This leave I spent with a family I'd been boarding with before, and it stands out in my mind, apart from being the first leave I have had, from one incident which was too hilarious for words. I'd gone dancing, because I love dancing. I used to went to a dance hall, and there were about six sailors, the rest were all soldiers dancing there with various girls. When the master of ceremonies stopped the thing and said, I've an announcement to make. Abel Seymour, so-and-so and so-and-so, who was a local lad, unfortunately passed away on leave, and his funeral is tomorrow. His parents would very much like six naval volunteers as pallbearers at the funeral. And I can assure you that those who take part in this will be offered a very sumptuous booze up and tea afterwards. There were only about six of us, so we all felt, you can't say, we all volunteered. So on the appointed day, at the appointed hour, I reported to this house, which was a working class area, back to back sort of place, and we were all taken into the front room, and the parents were very calm, and the father was delighted to see us. He was really grateful, running around with a bottle of whiskey and glass, and have a whiskey, have a top. So I had a top, and I put my glass down on the table next to me, and I was talking to somebody else when the father came up to me, "Would you like to see our Jack?" And I realised I'd put my glass on the coffin, which was standing there in the front room, closed. And he lifted the lid up, and there for the first time in my life, I see a stiff in full naval uniform. But the thing that struck me above all was that he was very pale, and his beard had grown. You know, he looked as though he could do with a shave. I turned away very quickly. Anyway, they shut the coffin. Eventually, the hearse arrived, and we marched in slow step up the road next to the hearse to the pub where he'd been a regular, and the barmaid came out weeping copious tears, and the landlord and landlady equally, and then off to the cemetery. The weather turned foul. The wind started to howl, rain started to come down, and the cemetery appeared to me to be on top of a sort of a hill outside Birmingham. And we arrived there and had to take the coffin into the chapel. And as we got it out of the hearse, the wind was buffeting us like mad. We had a job to keep our feet and march into the chapel, put the thing down, service, and then to the graveside. The weather had not improved. And the minute we came out, we were lashed by rain and the wind was coming. We were sort of nearly tipping over. I was afraid we'd drop him. But with a bit of luck, we got to the graveside, but the wind was sharp and it was cold and unpleasant, and it was getting your eyes, and there were tears running down our eyes because of the wind when we lowered him, and the family were ever so touched. They thought we were weeping tears of sympathy, which we were, I suppose, in a way, and went off from there after it was over to the pub, where we really had a slap-up meal. Loads of ham, I remember, and don't know where they got it from, but and beer as much as you wanted. That's all I remember of that leave.
How had he died?
I don't know, he died of natural causes or something at home. It may have been a heart attack. He was a bit older than myself. He wasn't a youngster. He was in his maybe early 40s, something like that. Anyway, I had to report to my depot, which was Plymouth. And my friend Philip was going, my depot was Devonport, I beg your pardon, which is Plymouth really, isn't it? And he was going to Pompey, Portsmouth. So that's where we parted. to meet again a few years later by chance on the underground. That's another story. I went in, reported to the barracks, and was immediately transferred to the signals barracks. I was in there one day, and the tannoy announced that I was to report immediately to the commanding officer's cabin. What the heck does he want from me? I haven't done anything, as far as I know. I thought I was in trouble. And I walked in there, and he said, Gartenberg, I've got some special instructions for you. You are to get your kit ready and leave for London this evening on the train at 8 o'clock, the night train, and report to RNTE South Mead at Southfields near Wimbledon tomorrow morning with all your kit. In the meantime, as soon as you're ready, collect your travel warrant and you do what you like for the rest of the day. Don't miss your train. Thank you, sir. Marched out. Spent a few hours ashore and then caught the train, wondering. Got to London, got an underground train to Wimbledon. Never heard of Southfields. Got to Wimbledon, dragging all this kit of mine off the train, and decided I'm going to take a taxi to wherever it is. I saw some taxis there, went up to one of the drivers, and I said, do you know where RNTE South Mead is in Southfields? Yes, that's where all the German and Japanese speaking blokes are. So I said, oh, what's this? So I took the taxi there. It was a big private house with a carriage drive and a flagpole in the front and all this. And I was shown into a classroom on my own and was soon joined by an officer who signed this secret, Official Secrets Act. And you are not to discuss this visit with anybody inside or outside this building. Do you understand? Yes, sir. I'm now going to give you some tests of knowledge of your knowledge of German. Written, spoken, into German, out of German translations. You will not leave this room until you are, I tell you to. Sit down here and I'll come and see you later. I sat there for about 2 hours translating stuff. He then came in and allowed me to go to the loo, which by that time I needed, and arranged for me to have a cup of tea and a couple of sandwiches, and told me to stay there, I will see you later. About an hour later he came back in and addressed me in fluent German and started conversation in German. For about an hour. He was very thorough. And when he finished, he said, right, just wait a little while in here. So I waited. Then he didn't come back. He sent, a petty officer came back, and he said, you're to go back to Devonport by train tonight. Here's your travel warrant. Get your kit and get yourself down there. I thought, oh, blimey, what have I done? So back I went with all my kit, reported to the signal barracks again. I was in there 2 days waiting an assignment to a ship or shore station. Tannoy. Order to Legofisk Gartenberg, report to commanding officer's cabin at the double. You know, so I rushed up there, thought, what the hell now? And this time the commander was exceedingly friendly. Sit down, my boy, have a cigarette. I thought, brass, red, they don't deal with people like me, you know, they didn't ignore you. But I was taken aback because he was very friendly. He said, I'm extremely proud that one of my boys has been selected for very special secret work and congratulate you on having passed. And I thought, damn it, behind the enemy line. That was the first thing that went through my mind. And he said, take the train tonight, same as been done a couple of nights before, with all your gear. And I went back to South Mead. And there I spent the next 2 or 3 months. Are you